and welcome to the next 100 Days podcast. My name is Graham Arrowsmith.
And my name's Kevin Appleby. Well, Graham, it's always nice to have a guest returning to tell us how well they're doing.
Yeah, well, this particular guest appears to be one of those people who can put as seen on TV. Well, he will be able to do that in a few weeks. But John McCleary, John, welcome back to the next 100 Days podcast.
Thanks very much for having me back, gents. Pleased to see your team's in a much better position than they were last time.
You're speaking as a Tottenham fan, aren't you? Or part Tottenham fan. So basically, you know, I suspect you've got as much to worry about as we do. Anyway, by and by.
The top eight in the Champions League can't be all that bad.
No, I suppose not. No, it's Jekyll and Hyde club, I think. So, John, you obviously care about football and everything else to do with that, because your business is, I suppose, is about getting people onto the pitch and playing. Tell us, give us a little bit of an update about the business. And then for those people who maybe didn't hear you back in, I think it was 2023, but basically tell us a little bit more about Business Fives. And then maybe if we can segue into what's happening, you're going to be on TV, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Look, great to come back on and provide you with a bit of an update. I think it was 2023 when we were last on, and we hadn't quite hit the £1 million milestone. So we did pass that, not a million miles away from you, Kevin. It was actually our Tees Valley event that got us over the line. We've been hugely busy here. It's been brilliant. We've been delivering our corporate charity football events, our mixed touch rugby events, our golf events, all over the country, all over the UK, Ireland. We've got as far as Amsterdam now, which has been pretty good for us. It's all going really well. We've been coming into a really busy period now this month. As of tomorrow, we're actually back in Middlesbrough, Leeds, Newcastle this week. And then Nema City in the UK will probably have an event there between now and March. So looking forward to it.
Leeds and Newcastle are all right, but Middlesbrough is a bit like a cemetery of the lights, isn't it? I mean, you're gonna have to really work out to get the sort of best out of those people, aren't you?
Not having it. I love our Teesside clients, genuinely. It's an event that I've led on for a while, and the people there are just really down to earth, up for a laugh. Really competitive as well. We've had a couple of national champions come from that event. Reigning England champions are a team from Stockton, Map Group. So fair play to them.
So just recover this. I mean, you're basically, you help businesses put teams together and then compete with each other. You don't help the business. You go to businesses and they then put together a team. Is that right? And then they compete in business teams.
That's right. We put on the events in the cities and then go out to the city, market the event and say we're coming along and see who's up for the challenge. And then teams come along. We put all the event on, do all the tournament management, the live scoring system, all that there. The really strong element running throughout the event is the 10% of everything we make goes to charity. So together with our clients, we've now raised, it's almost at 1.4 million, but it's not quite there. Wow. But it's been a brilliant journey. That Map Group that I mentioned, so they won the England final back in October. So they raised £3,000. We donated £3,000 on behalf of their efforts to the Butterwick Hospice. And the hospice have been in touch and they were hugely grateful for that donation. We actually managed to tie it in with the Big Give campaign, which able to double the fundraising total, which was fantastic. And they were delighted with it. So, yeah, really good to continue that positive impact for us.
Yeah. It's fantastic work that you're doing on the charitable side. And it's something of a surprise that what you told us a few weeks ago is that before long you're going to be on TV, but I'm amazed that you've not already been on TV, John, but that something's happening to get you some additional publicity. We're recording this in the early part of February, and around mid-February you've got an engagement with TV. Tell us a bit more.
Yeah, that's right. We're switching or pitching. So we're going to be doing a different kind of pitch. We've done it, we've been through the process. We actually got a phone call this time last year out of the blue, and it was, "Hi, it's Ben from the BBC. Have you ever considered a plan for Dragon's Den? And I was like, are you taking a piss? Like
What did he? Sorry, I missed the words there. What did he ask you to apply for?
Dragon's Den?
Dragons. Oh, sorry, Dragon's Den. Sorry, sorry.
Yeah.
It's I. You've got a Northern Irish accent, and it sounded like something else. But you know, because the BBC, it could be anything, couldn't it? Really. But Dragon's Den. All right. So you're going to be on Dragon's Den.
That's right, yeah.
How was she going to ask for?
50,000 pound for 5%.
Okay. Have you weighed up with your team, the alternatives to that?
Yeah, it was something that I give a lot of thought to, and I kind of wanted to go in at a level that it was going to be attractive for the investors to maybe come on board. I suppose my aim from it was obviously you want to get on TV whenever you're approached like that, but it was to maybe get somebody more on the mentorship side and to get that kind of business context and just benefit from their experience really was the goal. Not mad keen on the idea of going back into employment and having a boss again, but I think you would have ended up with a boss and yeah. But yeah,
I haven't watched it for a little while. I'm not, who are the investors now? I mean, do we know any of the names?
So Peter Jones is still there. He's been there
Okay.
since day dot. So he's the longest standing. Tucker Sullivan, Deborah Meaden, Stephen Bartlett, they're the kind of resident dragons. And then they've switched it up for the last couple of seasons where they have a guest dragon in each episode as well. So
You don't know who that is. It's not Elon Musk or something like that, are there?
it wasn't Elon Musk, no, but I'm sure he had 50,000 pounds spare, and he would have been a good guest dragon.
Was watching the Graham Norton show a couple of weeks ago, and they had a rapper on who was saying he was going to be the guest on the on Dragon's Den. I think it was Tiny Temper.
Good knowledge, Kevin.
Oh.
He was one of the guests at Dragons, yeah. And the trailer's been released, so if you have seen the trailer, you'll see Tiny Temper attempting to save a penalty from Tucker Sullivan. So yeah, the trailer's out there. I feature in it like for a millimeter of a say or a millisecond, pardon me.
Okay.
So yeah.
Oh, right. So we're going to release this on the on Friday the 13th of February. So you're going to this will go out slightly before the event. It will probably hopefully a few people will listen to this and then they'll go ahead and watch the program. Presumably you've already recorded the program.
That's right. So yeah, you go in. It's a really, really lengthy process, and that's what I wasn't blissfully unaware. You're kind of you know how much it takes. But from that phone call, things snowball, and there's just so many stages to go through. You get the call, and then you submit an application. So you have to compile together all the facts and information about your business. And then that was in February, and then I did the recording in June. But there's a lot of periods of kind of silence in there, of pitching on pitches if you're like us, then Zoom pitches and then pitches to producers that you never meet that are kind of hidden decision makers, countless emails, a really thorough due diligence process, which takes a lot of work to go into it. Everything you say in the den needs to be factually backed up. Now, but we don't make any kind of spurious claims about health benefits that stem from the event, or like fact. This is one of the things that we really discussed, and it was a brilliant thing to come out of our podcast last time was, trying to quantify the business benefit from business fives. And it's still really based around those charity numbers. So it was a really good thorough stress test for us is how well have we recorded that. And to kind of say that we've been through the washer with that, the BBC have verified all the facts that we've presented. That's that was a really good process to go through.
I mean, the one thing the BBC have is it's the sort of there's a lot of talent there that basically will go under that because they don't want to present anything on their channel that is that is wrong because they've got valuable listeners who are going and watchers in this case viewers who are going to look at the Dragon's Den. It's got such a strong heritage that basically you don't blame them for wanting to take you through a fairly sophisticated process. But was it too long, the process, do you think?
I don't know. I'll be able to answer come like the end of February because you want to be prepared. Like I've never been, you said, and I've never been on TV like where the spotlight's purely on me. I've been on Sky Sports News and like maybe summer, but not really in this where you're really exposed, you're really vulnerable. So part of that thoroughness is like check-ins with welfare officers just to make sure you're of a sound mind to kind of go through that process. They have calls with
Well, that would rule out
psychologists.
Kevin, wouldn't it? Let's
Well, it
face it.
would, yeah.
I mean, and me for that matter.
Honestly, if you've a past like mine, I'm not sure how I got past some of the checks that they had. There was criminal record checks, there was all sorts, but the psychologist calls. And yeah, it was
You had
all
a call
about,
with a psychologist then, John. One of their psychologists called you to find out whether you were going to be okay.
yeah,
Wow.
and it feels like overkill, but you are in that den on your own. You're
Oh.
completely exposed. There is no notes. What you see on TV is how it is. So yeah, they want to make sure that you're able to handle that. And
Take your mind back to. I'm fascinated by this. You remember the Fawlty Towers thing where he had the psychiatrists in, and Fawlty got really quite exercised by it all. But so I'm exercised in this sense because you've got this call with a psychologist. And the idea is to make sure you're of sound mind so you can go on to the Dragon's Den. Can you remember any of the questions that the psychologist sort of posed for you, or the generality of those questions? What were they about?
It was just really about your past and about was there any concerns that you had maybe that what might come out in the wash with this because there will be that's probably I guess it might be a huge business opportunity. Obviously it is a huge business opportunity with the investment you're going to get there, but you're going to get people from school contacting you and potentially, I don't know. I don't know what's on the other side of this, but I'm hoping that it's going to be a good way to kind of reconnect with a lot of people. And some of that reconnection might drudge up some things that you maybe forgot about, maybe that you wanted to forget about. So they're being really thorough with that, like kind of like, is there any skeletons in your closet? And how
Oh yeah,
you.
I'm an axe murderer. I mean, you're not going to say that, though, are you? I mean, but then again, maybe they're just assessing your reaction to that question.
Yeah, well, I think they kind of. You're wanting to be as open and honest as you possibly can throughout the process. So if there is any, then they create a really safe space. And I have to be hugely complimentary of the whole process. I think you need to be as prepared as I was going in. And and if part of that is, being as honest as you can with anything that's potentially hiding there, and not hiding there, there's nothing in my past that I, and it isn't open kind of forum and I'm not happy to talk about. But yeah, you want to be prepared for that. Like so, yeah, it all feels bang on.
Like you said, John, I mean, you grew up with friends, you grew up with people who perhaps didn't know you quite as well as others, and they will have formed an opinion 20 years ago, 40 years ago, wherever it is. They'll have an opinion as soon as it comes out that, hey, oh, I used to go to school with John, or I went to college with John, or whatever, I knew him at some point. They'll have an opinion. Not much you can do about that.
True.
So, and I guess up to a point, you putting yourself front and center, you've got to be able to cope with the aftermath. I'm quite impressed that they involved a psychiatrist or a psychologist in this process.
Yeah, and I think that this is the kind of side of all you see is the 10 minutes on TV. And I think it was in there for almost 2 hours. And so like, and that's every not contestant, but every entrepreneur that goes on, they go through the wash with it. So it's really intense when you're in there. From my perspective, it was amazing. It was everything I wanted it to be. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation, the engagement, and it was a phenomenal experience. But I felt prepared for that. But as you're kind of going through the stages, everything's a mini milestone, and you're kind of celebrating getting to the next stage. Right, we're into the next Zoom interview, we're into the next due diligence stage, whatever it might be. Right, we've passed that, great. But you're not allowed to talk to anybody. Like, you're sworn to secrecy with all this, and that's something that's quite challenging, because you internalize a lot of it. You end up having conversations in your head about it, because you're not allowed to talk to everybody about it, and it's all you want to talk about it, because it's quite consuming. And then everything kind of happens then on their terms and their timings. You don't get really any say in that. But
We
this.
still can't ask you whether you got the money or not.
Oh, well, you can ask, yeah. That's
You
absolutely
can
fine to
ask.
ask. But 2 weeks before, 2 weeks before they go in, they say, like, right, we'll give you a call, and that'll be your kind of 2 weeks' notice. I was on a beach, literally on one of the nicest beaches, La Tavolara, just off Sardinia. And I'm there with my wife and my two kids, and there isn't a, it's the kind of end of May, and there wasn't another sinner in the beach. And I get this phone call, say, you're going to be in the den in 2 weeks. And I'm like, well, I've got another week of holiday here, so your prep time's completely condensed. And yeah, you just have to roll with that and go with it.
In some ways that would have been helpful. What I'm interested in is, Kevin's a kind of a finance guy, so it's almost like if we could role play this at the moment. So Kevin, imagine Kevin, you're one of the Den investors, and if you had a question for John, knowing that you know John's business a little bit, what would that question be? Or what would you want from John if you had a question for him? What would it be, given that he wants 50,000 quid?
My question to John would be, are you doing this, John, because you actually want the 50,000 quid, or are you doing it because you want the publicity and everything else that goes with being on Dragon's Den?
We had allocated the funds that would have been really, really crucial to us at that point in time. We want to scale internationally, and we really were like, the hope is that the right investor that comes along with us on this journey is going to be willing to help us with that international expansion, open some doors to us that maybe we hadn't already thought about. And also just looking at the business from a different perspective, and we were just going through a process now of getting a new CRM, and that takes time and investment. So yeah, so that was the main aim of the money. And
So, do you have an idea of which, I mean, if it's, market expansion, whatever, I mean, Europe's nearest to us, or actually, is it actually Ireland? Is Southern Ireland or there or wherever? Is that the sort of logic? Are you there already? So, I mean, you'd expect, as an Irishman, you'd have thought was done Northern Ireland, but what about the South? Was there any kind of challenge in you operating your business in Southern Ireland?
No, so we operate now in Belfast, Derry, Dublin's a really big event for us. We're trying to get an event in Cork as well. So that to us has felt a pretty natural kind of, yeah, let's go there next. But we've the Amsterdam event. This is now We've got one at the end of March, and that'll be our fifth Amsterdam event, I think. We haven't quite got Rotterdam and Brussels off the ground yet, but they're the kind of next port of call. And then it's right, so what other European capitals that we could get to? Now, one of the biggest challenges with that is we're not a multilinguistic team. Well, one of my colleagues can speak five languages, none of which are particularly helpful in Europe. And we like one of the things we discussed in the podcast last time around was Australia, so maybe more those English speaking places, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, we feel like there'd be a good thirst for business fives here. America are there, pardon me. America's obviously got the World Cup coming up. And yeah, like we'd love to go and test the market out there because
Yeah,
it's
some
probably
natural
reaching the point
places
of
where you're at, but I mean, there are
if
some
I was a
natural
director
places.
coming in, if I
Sorry,
was a
Kevin.
director and asking you about the business, one of the things that would really concern me would be, well, you've started this from scratch, John. You've set this up, you've created a business here. Clearly, somebody else could come along and start a business in this niche. What are the barriers to entry that would kind of protect my investment to know that some other upstart wasn't going to come along and start a very similar business in the same niche?
One of the huge things we have now at the minute is like I think it's nearly 6,000, but we've got a network of over 5,000 companies that have been involved in the events, and it's we're now starting to work a lot more with other offices and other locations. So that is our huge asset. It's the community element of the events. It's the amazing clients that we work with up and down the country who put their time and effort into getting involved in the events and to doing their fundraising and everything that goes with that. And to me, that's one of the most protectable assets that we have. Now, we've distilled this down to an absolute fine art, and that is one of the things I think we might have discussed last time, but people can go and do it. There's nothing really preventing you from going and running any sort of event. The fact that we've married up sports with business is you I suppose not unique in any way, but at the scale that we do it at is probably one of the USPs that we have. And the negative know-how that we've learned from in the last 10 years of business, and we now have a really slick product. We've got spreadsheets after spreadsheets that have really precise formats for every permutation of teams. We can handle dropouts at a turn that around in a sixpence, where other people would take half an hour, it would delay their event. So we're doing a lot of outsourced event management because of the expertise that we've built up now, where you might fancy doing this, but actually you haven't thought about XYZ or this element. You maybe don't have the network of X players that we have that you could tap into. So people come to us now and say, look, we're thinking about doing this. Can you come and help us out? We want to put a professional touch to it. So, yeah.
It's the equivalent, Kevin, of what Dan Kennedy used to say about marketing, that the guy who can spend more is going to dominate the market. Now, I'm not saying for a minute you're necessarily, John, you're going to be spending more than the rest of them, but actually, what you've just described in terms of your processes, the way in which the neg all the negative things that you've learned have still got to be learned by other people, and even if they get really lucky and they don't have to go through some of those, it's a huge learning curve. So there are some natural almost barriers to entry, and so from that point of view, and of course, what's coming up with the BBC, that's another level. So it's another way of protecting business fives going forward, because effectively you've got as seen on TV. I mean, you've got that ability to actually say, we're the best. We just there are others maybe, but basically we're the best. We're the ones that you're going to get the most. You're going to raise the most for charity and so forth. All the benefits that you have will just keep you further ahead than the other people in the market. I'm interested in the allocation that you had in mind for the 50,000, because it's not a massive amount of money, but it's still fairly significant, certainly for 5%. What is it that you're literally going to do? Is it just the marketing of the events within different countries, or the setting up the network? How are you going to put that money to work?
Again, it's some of that market expansion. It's down to research and down to the right consultants that have their finger in the pulse. I'm not really sure if it's the best to do that in a franchise model, or it's best to do that we still have control over that. And so we need to sit down and give that real good interrogating thought. So Doing some of the research behind that is crucial. Building out our CRM was what was one of the big things that we had a allocated the budget for as well, as well as obviously marketing costs. But we didn't really want to kind of reinvest in staff. We've reinvested in staff, and we've got a really good team now as a result. They're brilliant, and they know exactly what they're doing. They are really hugely personable, and clients really resonate with the team that we have here, and that's one of our USPs as well. It's we care, we love what we do, and it comes across and it creates that environment. So the trade-off for us is, would that then we would be relinquishing that element of, you know, that personal touch if we were to say with a partner in, for talking sake, Australia, look, you're going to deliver the events and we're going to be hands off.
Is it something that you can do, John, though? Is it you, I mean, take a discrete country that, well, whether it's Australia or not, I don't know, but basically, because that's pretty big, isn't it? So if it was, say, for the sake of argument, South Africa, that you know, that you thought, okay, the rest of the world's going to be business five, but South Africa is going to be business five, South Africa Limited, and that's going to be owned by a franchise or whatever, however you structure it. And you get the advice from better big business brains than mine. But basically, at the end of the day, you can isolate the experience. Is that something that you considered or are considering? Or is it just one of those, look, I've got four or five options here. It's just one of them. I mean, how, you know, because you could actually say anything outside of the UK or everything is going to be franchised. I mean, it's the opportunities there are just amazing.
That is the opportunity, and that is one of the options. But where franchising to me makes sense, if somebody wants to leverage the brand and leverage the kind of know-how that we have, is really in those non-English speaking places and territories. So say somebody wanted to deliver business fives in Hungary or Georgia, or a place that I have next to no knowledge of, apart from, you know, being to Budapest once. I have no idea on the scale of the market out with the major cities. So is there scope for a national tournament where you're going to get 20, 30 teams in each region, in each city? But somebody with that local knowledge would know that. They would be like, right, in a second, right, we can deliver events X, Y, Z. This is a real goer for us. This would be brilliant. There is a couple of organizations that I like to think of as competitors, but there's an organization called FIFCO that do the kind of international corporate leagues tournament at the end of it all. And I would love a global business fives, like a world business fives, like the World Cup of corporate football, and all under the like. The big driver for me was to give back, to set up a community that allows to give back and allows business to be a force for good and football to be a force for good. And that's at the heart and center of everything we do. And I'd just, you would need to partner up with the right person with the right values that cares as much about that as well. This is the trade-off in my head. Sorry for like
It
having this
sounds like
conversation out loud.
your experience with the BBC is quite a good roadmap for the vetting, if you like, or the shall we say the bringing franchisees towards you. Excuse me, you've got a huge amount of experience there, and potentially you'd know that you'd need this, that, and the other to be factored into a relationship before you said you sign on a dotted line. Because it seems to me that it's quite a big, you know, it. There's a big brand damage issue that could go ahead here, and that's one of those things that could come back and bite you. So you have to be pretty careful about who you partner with.
Exactly that, and that's where, when you're relinquishing control like that, like even from a business owner standpoint, it was a big step for me to not be at my first event. I remember it was Leicester, and I think it was about 2021. It was just after lockdown, and the colleagues at the time went and they delivered a brilliant event, and the wheels turned without me. So I was like, right, great. That's because they had the knowledge and experience, and they've learned that. And So you would have a natural period with any franchisee that you would be skilling them up and training them up. And some people get it quicker, some people take a bit
Well,
longer.
they could come along and join you at your next event in whatever, Middlesbrough or something like that. And if they can get through Middlesbrough, they'd get through anywhere, couldn't they, really? I'm only kidding. Honestly, I do love Middlesbrough. It's part of Yorkshire, isn't it, really? But
Don't forget, I've lived and worked in that area for quite a number of years,
oh
Graham.
yeah, all right, yeah.
Yeah, there's a good bunch of people
They'll still
down.
talk highly of you, Kevin, won't they? I mean, there, so.
Pop in on Wednesday. We're down in Leeds. Dominic Matthews, our guest speaker.
Oh,
So
wow.
yeah, come in and shake his hand and say hello.
Yeah.
Alan
I
Thompson
did get an
doing the
invite to
Newcastle event.
the Newcastle event to put a
Who?
group CFO team together, but when there's only one of me, it's a bit difficult.
I think you do quite well on your own, Kevin.
I
It's
think I'm a bit old for this game now.
yeah. Well, yeah, you get your dogs to help you as well if they could nod the ball around the pitch. But yeah, I mean, John, it's fantastic news that you're growing so well. It really is because we do have a perspective. We have a moment in time, and presumably the BBC probably watched your video. You watched your episode, or at least listened to it. Because it'd been part of their due diligence as well. I mean, you're on record about talking about business 5 years ago. So, in a small way, we've created your business. I mean, let's face it, Kevin, we're the ones behind it, really.
Yeah.
Without us, it'd have got
One of the
nowhere.
dragons is going to take over that mantle now, but assuming this was successful. But John, that's something there. You give a dragon whatever percent of your business and the money comes in. Great, that's where the TV show ends. And it's supposed to be great, wonderful success, whatever. But what is the dragon actually after? Now, what's the pressure on you down the road? It's 2 years' time, it's 3 years' time. Is the dragon looking for a long-term investment? Is the dragon looking to double the 50 grand and get back out again? What pressure's that putting you under going forward?
That's where you really need to put your mind in their shoes. You're asking the right question with that. So you do that quite a lot in the run up to the show. The night before I'd gone into pitch, I didn't sleep a wink because you're having these conversations because you're really you're trying to get your mind into right. What's going to be attractive for them? How quickly do they want their investment back? And when they want it back, how much return do they want on that investment? What's realistic? Like, do they want to double it? Do they want to treble it? Do they want to double it and then leave some equity in? What counter offers could I have that might sweeten the deal for them? If you get your money back quicker, and it's completely bespoke to how they're feeling, how their mood is, and what they've resonated with you. That will determine what they offer on the day, and there's a whole process after that. Like, due diligence was a big thing for any business to go through, and when you're doing that, when you're not getting ready for a sale, like you're just doing it for preparation. You then have to do that on the other side. There is some staggering stat that I don't have access to about the amount of deals that collapse after the den. So whilst those offers are made in good faith and they're accepted in good faith, the terms of negotiation can get pretty complex once you leave the den. So,
It's not as simple, John, as saying 50,000 for 5%, because
yeah.
I mean, effectively what you're saying is I'll give you 5% of my company. Now, that's not necessarily a guarantee of a return on investment. It's just 5% of my company. Now, they might want a return on investment, but hold on, they've just bought 5% of my company. What is it? The thing is, you move from that kind of, I'm going to say, simplistic value investment to one that's maybe here's, because people come to me all the time, high net worth investors and so forth, and their offer is I want them to invest 50,000, and the return might be in, I don't know, 2 3 years, where they've doubled it or whatever it is. And do you believe it? So I don't particularly get into the due diligence, but I might ask a few questions about it, because how are you going to get that message across? But to me, they're not necessarily saying, here's 50,000, I want so much back in 2 or 3 years. But if it's just for simplicity's sake, it's 5%, then there's a bit of a argument about that. And they want something completely different. They want money in and money out in a short period of time. Were you prepared for? I mean, is that what the situation is? Is it literally just almost like a convenient thing to say it's 5% for, sorry, 50,000, 5%, just to get the conversation going, and then the conversation changes?
Well, that's it, because your end goal, my end goal might be completely different from their end goal. Like, to they can only realize that 5% when the company's sold. Really, that's the only time when that gets a value, unless they're getting a dividend of 5% as an investor every year or every time you can do that. And so there might be a lot of pressure that you're under on the back of that to, get your business ready to sell. Is that really what you want to do? And
Don't
so
think so.
a lot of these conversations you have to have with your head. You need to know what you're willing to offer and give in there, and be doing that in good faith. So there was like I had allocated the money. I would have like would have been brilliant. And the what you need to be careful of with that is what else you will. What's your goal out of it? What really is your goal? You have to be crystal clear going in there. And that's where Kevin's question earlier, that's bang on the money. Like, so is your goal the money? Are you tied to that as the outcome? Are you really wanting to go through the process? Are you do you want their advice and do you want that investment? Is it the exposure maybe that some businesses go on for? And yeah, everybody's different.
So that is a big thing, that you might have bootstrapped this business yourself right from day one. You've got no external investments. Suddenly, you've got that investor. Okay, it might only be 5% or 10% or whatever, but they've still got an expectation of getting that investment back, which you probably thought, well, hang on, I've set this business up by myself. This is a, yeah, okay, I want to really grow it, but it's still a lifestyle business. I've got no intention of selling it. It does change the dynamics a lot, having that extra person in there on board.
It really does. That is something you need to be completely prepared for and prepared to do. And yeah, it's that alignment of goals. So that's where it is a very rigorous chat in there. Like, what you see on TV is the kind of tip of the iceberg, but there's a lot of conversations that go into a lot of detail. They talk now, and everybody kind of talks about your mission and your values, and they do need to be aligned. That isn't woo-woo speak like that. They need to be passionate about it, about, and they have to have that shared passion. They have to have the belief in you, because this is the start of a relationship. That relationship's going to evolve. It's going to look a lot different then. And the relationship in the den is, the perfect picture of that. And the relationship in the real world, whenever you're working with somebody, like, are you going to be working directly with them? Are you going to be working directly with their team? What level of the team are you going to be working with? Are you maybe put out a joint for that? But that point, to your point about the blood, sweat, and tears that you put in as the kind of founder, that's something that nobody can ever take away from you. You're always going to be proud of that, and you're always going to be proud of that. And one of the things that I've always been proud of is we've done this without any investment, and that is something that will stand to you. But there's a time when you need to be more ambitious. You need to be wanting to grow. You need to get to that next level. And is this the way to get to the next level? It's these are the unknowns and the questions you need to ask yourself.
Before you made the decision to join Dragon's Den, I mean, you were approached by them, weren't you? So basically, there was was there a conversation that you had with a mentor or anybody else that said just what you've just said? There's a time when I need to do something different to scale.
Yeah, so I have a mentor that I've worked with for I think about 9 years, maybe nine and a half, through the Edinburgh Chamber of Commerce. And he is probably comes from the same area as you guys, ex-banker, brilliant business mind, but just a brilliant sounding board for my business. Knows us inside out, knows what we're all about. regularly pushes me to think about new things. And just from our brainstorming together, we come up with ideas. We think about different angles. So he's done a lot of the prep with me for this. He is kind of, and one of the things that we talked about from our first meeting was, what's the end goal here? What's your exit strategy? And you're starting a business. It's not really what you're focused on. You're trying to get it off the ground. You're focused on growth. You're trying to make it bigger. You're trying to make it profitable. And you're not really taking in the bigger picture. And he strongly encouraged me to do that every time we chat. So there's loads of different options there. This was one option as well. So there's lots of things that you need to think about, and you need to see if that's going to work for your business.
John, I'm conscious that you're not going to tell us anything about the show itself because it's not out yet. And this podcast will come out prior to that. So, for those people who get to hear about this straight away, then tune in to the BBC Dragon's Den, which airs on, is it Sunday the
Thursday the 19th.
Thursday, oh, sorry, Thursday the 19th. Okay, so it's about a week after the podcast comes out, so that people will be waiting with bated breath on the 19th. So you're not going to tell us what happens because you're not allowed to, but effectively, if you had to sum it up in a short, a couple of sentences, what would you say to other people who might be considering this, and what was it that you got out of it, regardless of the result of the show?
I have no regrets. I'm delighted that I was approached. It's been a really exciting process to go through. It's usually flattering. It's that somebody's interested enough in your business that they want to put you in the Dragon's Den. It's really consuming. That's the bit you don't really see, that you're constantly thinking about it before. That's quite a challenge when you're, I don't know, you're maybe not really used to the limelight and things like that. So you need to brace yourself for all that. You need to brace yourself for the intense scrutiny that you're going to be under, because it's just you in there. But having said all that, for me, it was everything I wanted it to be. It was an amazing experience. There's a few things in life that, some of us are lucky to go through, your birth of your first child, your wedding. I did a skydive once, which is amazing. And this is up there with those life moments for me. It was one of those things that I felt hugely proud when I came out. And it's so emotional. It's really emotionally charged. And I don't even know if I cried in there. I might have cried. I might not have. And but it's emotional. And you're not braced for that, just how much you care about your business. You know you care about your business, but until you're kind of under that intense pressure, that's when you really, I suppose, find that out. So yeah, it was brilliant. And anybody that's thinking about it, they go for it. It's going to be a brilliant stress test for your business to go through that process regardless. And yeah, you'll learn a lot about yourself along the way. So.
Thank you, John. It's been great having you back with Kevin and I on the next 100 Days podcast.
What a good success story there. Clearly, a business that is growing, growing fast, can use that money if he gets it from Dragon's Den. And we are actually broadcasting this a week after the Den show went out. Sorry. No, we're broadcasting it the day after, aren't we?
We are. The actual show would have been released on the 19th, and this podcast re is released on the 20th of February, 2026. But the good news is that hopefully you've watched the show, figured out what happened to John. But the
And
annoying
most
thing about
importantly,
this,
they didn't tell us. We
no,
don't
he
know
didn't.
what happened to him.
No. But actually, I don't think it was really. What was really interesting was the sort of depth of preparation that he had to go through, and some of the thoughts that he still has in his mind about the way in which any kind of investment would be used, and the sort of continual sort of thought about how we can expand, which oddly enough, 3 years or so ago, we covered that with John on the last time, because it's kind of natural for us to talk about where does he go next, etc. It's very much a future forward podcast, and it was a really interesting conversation, Kevin.
And it's interesting to find out that the process is as thorough, or possibly even more thorough, than you'd have if you were bringing any angel investor on board into your business. Now, you see the program on the BBC, and it's a bit like watching the highlights of football and Match of the Day. You see 10 minutes of a, if you're lucky, of a 90-minute process. Well, it's the same here, and you don't see the build-up beforehand. You don't see what goes on afterwards. Now it is a really thorough process going on with some genuine investors, but no, it's got to be turned into a TV show in a certain way. And for me, it was fascinating to find out how they, a little bit more about how they have turned a proper business process into something for TV, unlike The Apprentice, which I am incredibly cynical about, having known personally two people who applied for that process.
Well, I think I have a fairly cynical view about the organisation and some of the things that he's made done, but some of the beacons of what they do produce are things like The Apprentice, whether or not you don't think of it as a business show, it's more of an entertainment, but also Dragon's Den. I mean, they have a number of real beacons of TV, and you have to give them praise for that. There's no question about that. I think it's the other side of how they behave in certain other ways I'm dead set against. So basically, I think you have to take a balance with the BBC. But what John's going through is I don't know, it's fascinating for his business. And I think, if we had him on a third time, Kevin, with a bit of luck, he'll have figured out the franchise or not. And he would basically have gone into other countries, and his business might have trebled in size, whatever. But he, from very small acorns, I just think he's got a very, very strong chance of doing very well.
Absolutely. Wish him every success.
And on that note, I've been Graham Arrowsmith.
I've been Kevin Appleby. Goodbye.
Goodbye.